What's up, guys? Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. I'm here with Coach Penne.
Coach Nick Penne.
Was that close this time?
Yeah, you're getting there. I think by week 12,
hopefully,
you'll get it.
Hopefully. Yeah, look, I've been just trying to work on the enunciation of it.
All the passes.
Coach Nick, welcome to the Challenge Weekly Show. And we are going to talk today all about some fitness and health misconceptions. So, we, within our fitness careers, have coached a few different types of people, and we've interacted with different people online and face-to-face, and I feel like every single day I'm hearing more and more different, myths or misguided information, and some of them are quite unique and obscure and a bit odd and strange, right?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
And I think some of them have a very, very much some grain of truth to it. And many of them, are quite misleading. And, often when we have this arbitrary rules or sets or information that can really, untrack our progress, where we derail our progress and we feel lost, right?
Yeah, especially if you hold on to a certain one as a belief and it becomes part of you and you don't really understand why.
Yeah.
And you waste a lot of years doing that thing.
So let's jump into the first one. So we're going to go through a few different common misconceptions that we've experienced within the challenge, within fitness and health, and what we see on like social medias and movies and stuff like that. And I think the first one, probably the big one, probably the one that I get all the time, mainly from women, is that I don't want to get bulky.
Yes.
I want to just tone up, or I want to lean up, or something along the lines, but I don't want to get bulky. But have you heard that before?
Of course. And also, not just that, but I still want to have quote unquote toned looking muscles, but I don't want to look bulky.
Mm-hmm.
And so to have the toned looking muscles, you need to build your muscles. Like the muscles, visible muscles is what you would call tone.
Yeah. And look, I understand if you're a female, you're listening to this and you're going, well, Steve, Nick, I don't know. Like, I don't want to be bulky. Right. And okay, that's okay. If that's your ultimate goal, that you don't want to be bulky, that's okay. That's a fair goal to have. And we acknowledge that. All I'm going to say is that it is very, 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 very difficult to get bulky, right?
It is. Because you have to eat in a surplus for a huge amount of time. And then even then, who's actually to say how much of that's going to go to fat versus muscle and building base muscle anyway.
Yep.
So it's a long process and you'd have to be doing zero training, which isn't what you'd be doing if you're trying to build muscle anyway. So
Well, look, if we compare guys to girls, genetically guys are one, a little bit easier to grow muscle, and then two, we have a higher potential of muscle growth, right? And using myself as an example, I've been training for close to 10 plus years, and I would say that I lift moderate amounts, right? I'm not the strongest guy going around, but I lift moderate amounts, and I'm still waiting for the day that I'm bulky, right?
Yeah.
And I lift hard, I lift heavy, I eat a lot, and I'm still not bulky, right?
Yeah.
And if you're a female and you've been training for a couple of years and you're worried about being bulky, all I'm going to say is that that's firstly just not going to happen. Right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even when I was training super, super heavy, but not for specific bodybuilding, I still had spaghetti arms.
Spaghetti arms.
Like arms like a stick.
Yeah.
You know, I had a nice back from deadlifting and things, but I hadn't trained my arms specifically. So I had stick arms. Toothpick arms.
Yep.
I've only recently been directly training them. And there might be slightly more shape to them. And this is like hours and hours
of training.
So
if you're still wondering if you're going to get bulky, my first response is you're probably not.
Okay. No.
Next, it's probably best that you define what bulky means to you.
Exactly.
Right? Did you see a movie where there was a female who was, very questionable about what extra supplements that person was using? Someone who's been training for 20, 30 years, who lives as a professional bodybuilder for their life. Is that what you're defining as bulky? Okay, there's a high chance that you're not going to get to that. I'm not going to get to that.
No.
And I'm, lifting a lot and frequently and eating to get bulky, and I'm still not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're anxious that, if you start lifting a dumbbell that you will magically wake up with muscle, that might be a misconception because there's a lot of hard work that goes into that.
Yeah, right? I mean, I'd be jealous.
I'd be jealous too. Yeah.
So it's not going to happen. The idea also is that I think people worry about, well, basically if you're building muscle but you're not losing any body fat ever, your muscle will get bigger underneath the fat, which will make you appear like you take up a little bit more space in the world. It mm-hmm. doesn't necessarily mean bulky unless that's what you mean, but then that would just mean you lose a little bit of body fat over that mm-hmm. in the end. It's a process anyway, but yeah. Because muscle does raise your metabolism, having more muscle, that does take care of itself for newbies, really. Yeah,
absolutely.
It evens itself out.
And if you scroll through Instagram lane and you look at some of the women on Instagram who are posting, you know, some lean bodies and firm mm-hmm. bodies, or however you want to describe some of the bodies you see on Instagram, I guarantee most of those women are weights training, resistance training, and focusing on getting stronger and trying to build muscle, because ultimately that shape that we want, that tone, lean look yeah. that we want, comes from firm muscle.
Absolutely, yeah. The only way you can get any shape whatsoever, genetically, I don't believe I have any shape. So anything that has been created has been through gym work. So it's the best way. You're actually in control of sculpting your body. You can mm-hmm. think of it like that. Mm-hmm. And you're in control of that. You can choose where you want to put it. The only thing that you can't really do, and another misconception, is people say, I want to grow my glutes, but I don't want to grow my legs.
Mm.
I haven't worked out. I mean, I suppose you could, but I think it's nicer to probably have a more functional leg as well that yeah. can do a little bit more. So
yeah.
that's probably a misconception as well.
Absolutely.
Mm.
I think ultimately, just think of you in a gym right now, and you've already seen maybe some guys who are lifting, you know, hundreds of kilos at a time. You know, are they bulky? Yes or no? Then compare that to what you might be lifting. Let that be 50 kilos or whatever the amount you are, and then do you think that that's going to make you to the same extent, right? Mm. So don't think that you're going to get bulky through strength training. If anything, you're going to get lean, you're going to get toned, you're going to get in shape.
100%. And I know a lot of challengers already know this.
Yep.
I do. I know. I see you guys all the time. And if you look on the Facebook group, you see how amazing everyone looks, and that is just simply because they are doing that.
Yep.
Mm.
Let's move on to the next one. So the next probably most common misconception that we get in the challenge in fitness and in health is usually around cardio.
Mm.
And often that, you know, cardio might be the most effective way to lose weight, or that you need to do copious amounts of cardio to lose any weight. And if you're not doing cardio, you're not losing weight. It's something, you know, related to cardio. Have you seen that misconception all before?
The time. I mean, honestly, it's the biggest one. Mm. And I wonder where it stems from the 80s aerobics classes. Things,
yeah. Know,
all the way back then. But it's just a way of using more energy. That's mm-hmm. what it is. So sometimes it's better not to use that. It's sometimes actually better for you not to, and just to stick to the prescribed exercises. You don't have to. I still get people even that just message me and say, I'm doing extra. And it doesn't really make sense to me as to why,
mm-hmm.
because we've been taught, I think it also stems back to, we've been taught that you need to suffer greatly to achieve what you want in the gym. And I disagree with that now. And mm-hmm. I believe that I have suffered greatly to figure this out for you guys, that you don't need to suffer greatly.
Mm.
I don't think you do. You don't need to. I can tell you 16, 17 spin classes a week for a long, long time, and my body didn't look like I wanted it to.
Mm.
So if that was the magic answer, I would have had that magic answer immediately.
Doing lots and lots of cardio.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I believe that makes you really good at doing lots and lots of cardio.
Yeah.
That's what it makes you good at.
So I think, you know, we really need to be clear that, you know, we're not calling it a myth, right? Because there are, you know, some grains of truth to doing cardio, right? So if we are doing some cardiovascular training, some, you know, steady state exercise, like, that is going to expend more energy. Yeah, you said that.
Definitely. Strategically, though. In this
strategically
game.
Yeah, because then we ultimately need to, you know, we have a finite amount of resources and we get to choose, do we want to just be spinning the legs and exhausting ourselves, or do we want to be focusing on building ourselves, right?
That's right.
And ultimately we want to be building our shape, our muscle, right, rather than just expending and spinning the wheels.
Yeah, and you want to use it, and I reckon we've spoken about this before, but this is just bite-sized.
Mm.
You want to use the cardio as a tool in your toolbox. So if you're already emptying your toolbox out before you've even started building your base, then you won't have that as a tool later. So if your body's used to doing that amount of spin or that amount of walking or running or whatever you do, it's not going to be counted as a tool for your fat loss ultimately, because you've got that's your starting point. So
it's kind of like that old analogy of a car, right? So like you can either choose to be driving your, let's say, little hatchback, maybe like a Toyota Corolla. I used to drive a Toyota Corolla. And you know, you're just spinning around the neighborhood just trying to expend fuel for some reason. Or maybe you're driving to Perth and back because, you know, you're just trying to expend all the fuel. Then at the end of the day, you're left with a Toyota Corolla with an empty fuel tank. Cool, happy days. Is that the ultimate goal that we want? For some people, yeah. If you want to be really good at driving your Toyota Corolla, okay. But for most people, we don't want to be driving a Toyota Corolla forever. Some people want to be driving like a Ferrari or a Lamborghini or a Tesla or whatever it is, right? And the process of strength training is that we're kind of upgrading our engine, right? So we're going from maybe like a 2-liter little engine to like a V8, you know, turbocharged engine, so that when you do go for a drive in your car, you're expending more energy when you're driving, right? So then you don't have to drive all the way from like Melbourne to Perth. You can just drive from like, you know, the outer suburbs of the CBD in Melbourne, and you'd be able to expend the same amount of energy because you now have a bigger car. And then if you, you know, I'm sorry to those people who are driving Toyota Corollas. I drove a Toyota Corolla, but you know, if you did want to upgrade your engine and you wanted to look like, you know, a muscle car or like, you know, a big vroom-mobile, a vroom-mobile, you know, we do need to put in time to upgrade the engine of the car first rather than just spinning the wheels.
Right? Yeah. And also, what do you put into a Ferrari? It is the fuel. It is much higher quality. It's
premium fuel.
So that's the whole thing. Like, You want to treat yourself like you are a premium car.
Yeah.
And do what premium cars do, which is a lot of resting around as well, premium cars. They don't get driven every day, all day.
No, but they get looked after. They get polished. They get serviced.
Right on after. So that's very important. That's what you need to treat yourself as.
Yeah. Here's a similar misconception or kind of a myth where if you are overweight, you have to either lose all the weight first before you can build muscle, or you're turning fat into muscle. Have you heard of those misconceptions before?
I absolutely have. Someone said it to me the other day about turning fat into muscle. Yeah, and obviously, that's not right. They're two different things.
So like your body doesn't directly turn body fat, like adipose tissue, into muscle tissue.
Become each other, and muscle doesn't become fat. Like the actual two separate things do not become each other.
Yeah. It's like saying that your stomach's going to turn into your liver. It's like, exactly. They're different things, right? Yeah. I think maybe there is some sort of little bit of a grain of truth where, you know, fat tissue is ultimately stored energy in the purest sense. And a way of growing muscle is to convert that energy into muscle tissue. So someone who is has a little bit of body fat on them might find it a little bit easier to grow muscle than someone who's really lean. And we might compare maybe you and I right now. You're at a quite lean body fat percentage. I've got a little bit of body fat on me. I'm probably in a better position to grow muscle than yourself, who would be quite lean, right?
Yeah.
Not that the fat will directly play a role in it, but it'll kind of influence it slightly.
It helps. It also just helps with general performance, like say even your joints and other things, they're more capable than mine right now of performance and being under load and other things. Like I wouldn't place myself under a huge amount at the moment. So I'm probably not in the optimal position
to be
doing anything.
So look, this leads into the next one. Our good friend, spot reduction.
Oh, yes.
You know, I only want to lose weight in my midsection or my thighs or the tuck shop lady arms. Like, you know, spot reduction or trying to train for a specific body part.
Yes, or I've seen a few things like, you know, my bum still has certain bits of fat on it and other things like that. And unfortunately, even when you're losing fat from certain areas, it might just happen gradually. So as your butt loses body fat, it might appear like there's actually cellulite or something like that on there, but you're actually losing fat. It's just that it's gradually happening. So as it's shrinking, the texture is a little bit different because the fat's coming off just a little bit gradually in spots. You can't just go, okay, I want the entire butt cheek to disappear. Which you wouldn't want it to anyway, but you know, like, oh, I want this specific area. It just simply doesn't happen like that. And it's usually, unfortunately, the last bits, you know, the bits that you hate the most are the ones that take,
hang around.
Yeah, and yeah. If you don't have patience, then you'll never see that happen because it takes a lot of patience to get to that final bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think I see this question come up frequently, very frequently. And it doesn't help when there's, you know, workouts to tone your thighs or workouts to tone your buttock or tone your arms and these. And it's across our media. It's across social medias, movies, these types of things. But you're right. Ultimately, weight loss happens mainly via genetics. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, where you store your body fat is first via genetics and then second via gender. Right. Mm. So we know that females are more likely to store body fat around their hips and thighs, which is why you might see some women who are slightly out of shape. I mean this with empathy, but, you know, you're slightly carrying a bit more body fat, but they've still got that, you know, thin waist and a little bit more of that hourglass shape. Right?
Yeah.
100%. That's an image that you could probably start to
picture.
Right. And then similarly with guys, we store body fat mainly around our midsection.
Mm.
And you can maybe picture a really stereotypical, let's say, truck driver who's got like really lean legs, really lean arms, but then a nice pot belly, right?
Mm.
Or the classic dad bod, right? So when guys, we go, oh, well, I want to just lose weight in my midsection, I say, you know, sorry, buddy, like that's the last spot you're likely going to lose body fat is around the midsection.
Yep.
And then girls, if you just want to lose weight around your hips and thighs, again, I'm sorry, that might be the last place that your body decides to lose body fat.
Particularly for women in those areas, because they're the ones that technically keep you fertile. It doesn't mean you have to carry excess there, but your body's going to go, hang on a minute. It's going to definitely not switch off those things until it really, really, really has to.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's going to take from, sorry to say it, but boobs go first.
Boobs do go
first.
They
just do.
Yeah.
So that's the way a lot of people will relate to that.
Yeah. And I guess I've seen lots of different accessories to try to target different parts of your body, right?
Yes.
Like I've seen different creams and like estrogen blocker creams, all these fancy weird things and scrubs and stuff. And you've probably seen waist trainers and things.
Yes, all of that. anything that heats up that particular area will make you sweat.
Mm.
It might, the theory would be that it encourages blood flow to that particular area, but that's for such a short amount of time anyway. And yeah, there might be a little bit more blood flowing through that particular area, like where fat is stored. Sometimes it's a bit cooler to the touch, but it's nothing that is worth hanging your hat on whatsoever.
No.
It's just good old time spent in a calorie deficit. And just with those bits of fat as well, I would have to say, just only using myself as an example, there's not even really any flexible dieting when it comes to that. It's really just actual micronutrients as well.
Mm.
I feel like for those last little bits of body fat, it's very much not sneaking stuff in.
No.
Just keeping it really nice and lots of water as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely. You just can't, there's no point in worrying about trying to reduce bits of your body. It's just, you have to see yourself as a whole and a whole project and just take it as it comes with that.
Mm. Mm. Now, I do think that there are some things that you could do. And maybe if we touch on, let's say, bodybuilding as an example, right? So there are ways that you can manipulate your shape 100%. To kind of hide, right? Different areas. So let's say, love handles as an example. That little bit of body fat that hangs around the outsides of your abdomen, right? Now, if you were someone who spent some time developing your lats, right, that V-shaped muscle, your big back muscle, and then a bit of time maybe developing your glutes, you can start to picture this silhouette where as you grow a bit of muscle around your upper body and you create this V shape, and then you grow a little bit of muscle around the buttock, you can kind of make this illusion that the body fat is becoming smaller in the area. It might not change, but it might look a little bit smaller.
Definitely.
Right?
And that's why bodybuilding is fun.
Yeah.
Because that's where you can take control of your shape.
Yeah.
And it's actually, it's funny, it's not by reducing, it's by growing other areas.
That's right.
So rather than getting smaller,
you
manipulate other areas to make other areas look smaller.
Yeah. And, you know, let's say your arms, right? Like, I'm talking about the classic tuck shop lady arms that some people stereotype. If you did have a low muscle tone in the area, the arm is going to look shaky. Like, I think any person, if they kind of hung their arm out and then just tried to shake it, like, you'd get that jiggle, right? It's normal. But if you were someone who had a higher resting tone in the muscle, so there's more nervous input going into the muscle tissue, you've got some more muscle mass. You know, picture like an Arnold Schwarzenegger when he's competing, right? He's got a big bulk of muscle. Yeah, he might have a little bit of body fat there, but it doesn't have the same jiggle to it, right?
Yep.
Even myself.
It's filled out.
Yeah. So even myself, like, I'm carrying a little bit of body fat, but like if I'm to sit there and try to poke my arm, it's a small amount of jiggle compared to someone who might not be training as much as I am, where it would jiggle more. So that's when we go, okay, we might not be able to directly lose body fat in the area, but we can change the way that it kind of looks. So there is ways that we can build muscle. We're not necessarily toning. We can't tone anything if it doesn't exist. We can't tone muscle that doesn't exist.
Exactly.
So we first need to build some muscle. We might be able to change some shape of a muscle, but we can't really spot reduce.
Right. No, so it's just the wrong way of looking at it, but how you've described it is the perfect way of looking at it, because it also gives us control, because we can decide which muscles in our body we want to focus on.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the next one is probably one you've heard a lot as well. It is the misconception or myth that you are not allowed to eat anything after 6 o'clock, which is also you're not allowed to eat anything after 8 o'clock, which is also you're not allowed to eat carbs after 6 or 8 o'clock. So I don't really know what the myth is meant to be, but it's often something along the lines of that, and something to do with, you know, not eating in the evening and those types of things. And
as though your body just knows when it's 6 o'clock and that's it. It's very difficult for, I don't know how anyone gets lean, because most people finish work around 5.
Yeah.
I don't know how everyone's so organized to have their complete family dinner and all done by 6.
By 6. I don't know how people survived in Melbourne when we just had the daylight savings change, right? So all of a sudden...
We all got fat really quickly.
Yeah. So look, I think that it's definitely a load of nonsense that at a certain time, you know, your body magically thinks that, you know, this food is now fat rather than food, or that, you know, the magical fat fairies are going to come along and bless you with fat, or, you know, curse you with fat,
your
or whatever it is.
Metabolism doesn't stop working at night. All your functions do not stop working while you're asleep.
No. Now, I do think that there is some grain of truth to this, right, where if you were one to be more inclined to snack at night, you know, have desserts in the evening, be a fridge picker, or wake up in the night and go and eat and these types of things. If you had a hard and fast rule that you don't eat after, let's say 8 o'clock, you just don't eat, you may benefit from that, because then you've got a hard rule that you can help manage your overall caloric intake.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you're a bad person if you eat at 10 o'clock. No, you're not a bad person. I eat late at night. It's not an issue. But it can work for some people as a general rule to be like, oh, well, you know, I'm not going to snack in the evening because this is a rule that I follow.
Yeah, right? And that works. That's just compliance as well. So that absolutely helps with compliance. And also, the other thing is around your training. If you want to do nutrient timing, some people want to time more of their carbohydrate meals around when they're training. So it depends if you're a nighttime trainer. You know, you also do need to... Generally, most people need to eat after they train. So if you can only train at nighttime, you're going to have to eat something after. That's
the answer anyway.
So and that is what it is.
So I think a similar response to this misconception is my similar answer to those that ask me about intermittent fasting, right? Where, you know, there isn't anything inherently magical about fasting that we kind of know of at the moment within scientific literature, but it is a great way to help reduce our overall caloric intake, right?
Exactly.
So if you've got a hard and fast rule that you don't eat between, let's say, 8 p.m. and then midday the next day, so you're only eating through an 8-hour window, chances are you're going to eat less food than the average person who has a normal, like, scheduled eating time.
So as long as you don't do the thing where some people say that, this is another myth, that if you intermittent fast, you can eat whatever you want. Because that's the first, I think when you first find out about it, you're like, I could just eat whatever I want as long as I fast.
Yeah.
And it's very important not to do that, because then you'll be one of those people that goes, I did it and all I did was put on weight. But it's just that you weren't in a calorie deficit. No. So somehow you managed to squeeze more calories.
In a shorter time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Detoxes.
Yes.
Have you ever done a detox?
Not a specific, well, yeah. Maybe like, oh, maybe years ago, sort of those teas and other yeah. things that were around and yeah. thinking that was going to be a big deal.
Some magic happens when you yeah. detox, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think you just kind of shit yourself.
Yeah, exactly. it just involves a lot of poo.
Yeah. No, I think detoxes are definitely a load of nonsense, especially yeah. when we think about, you know, what the liver does or what the kidney does that, you know, detoxes things. What are you detoxing is probably a question you want to ask
That's
yourself.
That's right. What's going on?
Now, there is a little bit of medical grain of truth to this, right, where there are such a thing as medical detoxes where, you know, things like heavy metal toxicity exists, where if you are living in certain areas around the world, you are prone to having higher metal content mm-hmm. in your food. So you might need to go through like a medical detox because your liver can't actually keep up with detoxing the metals that come through your body. Similarly, let's say alcohol, right? Mm-hmm. If you're constantly pumping alcohol into your body, there's only a certain threshold that your liver can keep up with. So your detox might be just to stop having alcohol so your liver can keep up.
So they're the circumstances yeah. where you could even see professional help for that.
That's right. So I think at the end of the day, like detoxes are a thing. Right, mostly medical thing. Mm. But if you think that you need to detox on lemon and honey and cayenne pepper or whatever it is, I don't know what the latest yeah. one is. If you think that that's something you need to do, you probably don't. It's probably just going to make you feel really crappy for a bit of time and probably going to help you to derail faster off of, you know, your goals.
So right? I think the reason why people think that they might work is because, once again, they reduce your caloric intake for 4 or 5 days or whatever the mm-hmm. detox is. It mm-hmm. just simply will make you have less calories. And also the same as, like, how gross, but like a tea that makes you go to the toilet all the time, you're basically just getting rid of everything out of your body. Yeah. So you might be lighter because
yeah.
you're nearly probably dehydrated.
Dehydrated, yeah.
So that's going to make you think, oh, I've lost weight, but yeah. it's actually probably throwing your electrolytes out of balance and other things like yeah. that. But yeah, we don't recommend.
No, don't eat it. Yeah, just lose your water, lose your glycogen,
yeah.
and then you probably feel like crap for a few days.
Yeah, but you might weigh less on the scales, but it's not in a good way.
No, no. Let's talk a little bit about exercise and working out.
Mm-hmm.
Sweating
yes.
while you're working out.
Yes. Yeah. A lot of people will say, if I'm not sweating during the workout, it was too easy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very interesting one because some people sweat for no reason and some people don't sweat at all. Yep. It's really not a marker, especially when weight training, I must say.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really must say because I don't crack a lot of a sweat when I'm weight training. I mean, I might if it's a very hot day, or I'm not going to say yes or no for sure, but I know from my numbers and from what I'm tracking and how I've gone, I know that I'm getting better and better and better. So I can't put the two together.
No.
I just simply can't.
No. I agree. Sweating is not a determinant of how successful your workout was or how effective your workout was, right? Because you're right. If you want to sweat, it's going to sauna.
Exactly.
Does that mean that you're going to get fit? No. Yeah. And then you compare it to the other extreme, let's say like an Olympic weightlifter who in their workout might only do like 3 or 4 reps of a movement. They're throwing 100 kilos over their head.
Mm.
Do you think that individual is going to be sweating lots? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe if the lifting hall is warm, they might be. But, you know, it's not going to be increasing their core body temperature to a point where they're sweating lots, right?
Yeah. It's not an indication of anything. So don't think that just because you've completed a workout and you haven't had a sweat, don't think that that's any indication that it's not working for you.
No.
There are other markers that you need to watch. So it's just, I think advertising once again says, you know, I mean, classes are called sweat and other things. And it's like, how could you not think that you need to sweat?
Yeah. And if we think about weight loss, most of the weight loss from exercise doesn't actually happen while we're exercising. Right, most of it happens through like an epoch after training, or through our recovery period, or as we build up our muscle mass or we increase our metabolism, then we actually start to expend and metabolize body fat.
Mm.
Do you know where body fat goes once it's been metabolized?
Into your wee.
Close, but no.
Oh, into your breath.
In your breath, you breathe it out. Yes. Yeah. So through the process of gluconeogenesis or the breakdown of body fat. We go through that process, we break it down, and eventually turns into carbon dioxide. It goes through our lungs and we breathe it out.
Yes.
So you don't sweat body fat out. You don't poop body fat out or pee body fat out. You can poop dietary fats, and that's what makes your poop smell. there's a little bit of poop. So we're talking a lot about poop today.
Because poop's important. We should do a podcast on
the
poop.
Bristol school, stool chart.
Hopefully you're not eating dinner while if you are, it's okay.
It's fine. Yeah. Everybody poops, right?
Yes.
Similar one to sweating while you're working out, it's the idea that you need to be sore after you work out.
That's huge as well.
I believe that for a while, you know, and at the moment, you know, I don't get a lot of DOMS. There's sometimes when I introduce a new exercise or really take an exercise beyond failure, I pull up a little bit sore afterwards. But the idea of DOMS or delayed onset muscle soreness is more of a rare thing where it might happen once a week, once a month, something like that now. Because ultimately being sore, well, firstly define what sore means, right? But, you know, feeling that muscle ache and pain afterwards might not be a good thing long term.
No, for my body, I actually find that as I get leaner, I don't pull up as well from my workouts, and soreness to me is actually a hindrance, and it's an indication. I'm like, oh gosh, I'm on the right track for what I'm going for right now, but I think, you're getting to that point now, because for me, I feel like, I actually feel like it's a marker of having pushed myself a little bit too hard, of being under recovered.
Yeah, because then the next bout of exercise you do, you can't train as hard.
Exactly. Right?
So then that could lead to a negative feedback loop where every session you're training a little bit less hard than last time. So instead of training 100%, you're 90%. Then you're 90% of that 90%. Then 90% of that 90%. Then you end up in this like cruisy period where you're training at 50%. And I've done it. You've probably done it.
Oh, yeah.
Where you're cruising along for weeks and weeks and weeks, and you're like, why aren't I progressing? Why aren't I? Rah, rah, rah. It might be because you're gunning to try to be sore. You're trying to overdo it to try to stimulate some sort of growth. But really, that's the reason why you're not growing.
Yeah. So it'd be really good if you could understand that moving forward, if people could understand that, because it's just going to help so much with your training. If you don't, I mean, sometimes you are going to be sore, especially say if you're doing a squat and you just go that little bit deeper, you might do some pauses. I often find that if I do any sort of training where I'm pausing anything, I will get a little bit sore, but I understand that that's going to happen. That's just a different variation in an exercise where you're going to feel that, but you shouldn't be feeling it after every workout.
No, and it shouldn't be something that you're striving for to be broken.
No, because that just means less time in the less quality time in the gym. More recovery needed. Yep. Recovery is where it all happens, isn't it?
Absolutely.
That's the thing.
Let's talk about ab training.
Yes, let's talk about it. So, even though, like, I love to show everybody in the lives and everything a good core session, I'll never stop doing it, but it doesn't build your abs. Like, doing those sessions doesn't make you get abs.
No.
Did you know that?
No.
Oh, no.
Well,
yeah.
I think, like, first we need to define, like, what's the difference between ab training, training the abdominal muscles, versus core training. So I think when we think about our abs, most of us are thinking about the six-pack muscle, the rectus abdominis. Some people are thinking about the obliques, but most of these like frontal facing superficial muscles that we can see. Now, by definition, within physical therapy, we talk about core muscles being muscles that attach onto the spine, right? And things like your rectus abdominis, the six-pack muscle, the obliques, don't attach on the spine. So there's a very large difference to core training, more which closely relates to stability training, versus abdominal training, which is mainly, you know, spinal flexion or to train those muscle groups, right? And most of us, you know, go into positions like, oh, I'm going to hold a plank because I'm working my core. It's like, well, great, you're working your core, but you're not building your abs, right?
Very different.
Or people go the other way, like, oh, I'm doing a six pack to train my core. It's like, well, okay. I'm doing an ab crunch to train my core. It's like, well, you're not actually training your core through an ab crunch, right? You're probably better off training your core through something like a Pell-off press or a heavy overhead press or a heavy deadlift. Probably trains your core a lot more than a plank, right?
It certainly does. I mean, I think all of those compound exercises are so you wouldn't be able to do them if you didn't have
a strong...
Yeah, a strong core. I mean, you'd be able to do them, but you would very quickly see weaknesses in people's movement patterns.
Mm-hmm.
If their core wasn't strong. And I mean, often I'll see people, even if you're doing a bent over row and you can't kind of, you get that lower back pain and things, you can see there that there's just a weakness in the chain.
Yeah.
So I think specific core training is just, it's not something that you necessarily need to focus on. I know people want to look a certain way, but it's completely, they're just not related. That's what we're trying to say. They're not related to each other. And also pelvic floor as well. That's so essential for women.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Well, true. Yeah, true.
Mm-hmm.
True. Yeah, if you've had children, that's another little, I'll just interject with just a little bit of a myth as well. If you've had kids, it doesn't mean that you forever have to wee yourself when you're in the gym or anything like that. That's something that can be fixed. I thought I'd just say that.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not something that you don't have to go, I've had kids, so I can't jump on a trampoline ever. You can actually go and visit a professional who will help you work your way back. So that's not something you're stuck with forever either, because that's a myth that I do hear, like working with women a lot.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'd love to put that out there just in case you're someone who's like, oh gosh, I've had kids and there's just things that I can never do anymore. Mm. Or I've heard from people, that women shouldn't deadlift heavy because of that sort of stuff. So it is possible. It's just, you just need good advice to rehabilitate yourself from the ground up.
Absolutely.
Mm.
Still talking about abs. Do you know what the minimum effective volume required to grow your abs is?
Gosh, I haven't really thought about it.
Yeah.
Because I'm a bit hopeless with my abs because I don't really train them that much.
That's the point I was going to make. So when we think about different muscle groups, there's an idea of a minimal effective volume, right?
Yeah.
If you want to grow your quads, you need to do some sort of training to grow your quads, right? Same with your glutes, same with your biceps. You need to do something. And
That's right.
We kind of think about what's the minimum we could do.
Yeah.
Is it one set? Is it 10 sets? Is it 30 sets, right?
I haven't really thought about it, but there's no prescribed anything.
Yeah. So the answer to that, for most beginners up to late stage intermediates, is zero.
Yeah.
So for most people, and I would say that you and I may be in that advanced category, but for most people, you actually need to do zero abdominal-based exercises to grow your abs.
Yes.
Right?
I was trying to explain that to Shane the other day
because
he was telling me to give him some ab exercises and I was just saying to him, that's not what you need.
Yep.
You just need 6 sets of less beer.
Right? When I was thinking about my time bodybuilding, I didn't do any abdominal work, but as I lost weight, my abs just were there. My little pack was there. And they were quite bulgy abs. I was like, oh, Jesus, where did they come from?
It's because of all the lifting that you've done over the years.
The lifting, yeah. So
they helped you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Getting ready for my dad jokes.
Yep.
But look, at the end of the day, if you are worried that you need to do more ab work, you probably don't. And you get all the ab work you need from doing heavy compound lifting.
Yeah. And also the other thing is, even for some people, you won't know this until you lose a lot of body fat. Some people have genetically blockier, more visible abs.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way it is. It's like any body part.
Mm-hmm.
It's like some people's quads or calves are standouts.
Mm-hmm.
And some people, they can lose all the body fat in the world and they won't have abs. You see that on bodybuilders as well.
Yep.
It's the way it is.
It is the way. And just to add on to abs, I think the saying that abs are made in the kitchen, a little bit misleading as well. Abs are really made in the gym, but they're exposed from the kitchen, right?
They're made in all the compound lifts and everything that you do every day over and over and over again. And then they show up when you drop your calories for an extended period of time, for however long it takes for them to want to show.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, gosh, on fire.
So there's another misconception around exercising, right? Where some people believe that they could eat whatever they like as long as they're working out.
Yes.
And this goes along a similar vein of, if you work out, you're allowed to reward yourself with food, or that the other side where you punish yourself because you've eaten something by trying to burn off food, right?
Mm.
And I've seen this in my times when I was a group fitness instructor or training people, and some would come to me being like, oh, well, I'm allowed to go out tonight because I work out.
Mm.
Or even they'll say that to me being like, oh, well, you work out, you can have this pizza. And it's like, well, I mean, I could, but it's not a free ticket to eat whatever I like.
That's right. Right.
And I think this is the basis of some poor relationships with food.
Definitely.
Where we would either punish ourselves for eating food or reward ourselves for exercising by eating a certain food, right? And I don't think that you, just because you exercise, gives you open permission to eat whatever you like, especially if you have certain goals.
That's right. It comes down to your goals. Because, technically you can eat whatever you want and exercise and... but you're just not going to get to the goals that you probably have.
Achieve, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think at the end of the day, we humans often over-report how much physical activity we do and under-report how much food we eat.
Yeah, it's by quite a bit, isn't it? I think it's like something like 30%.
It's huge.
Something, yeah.
And we see it all the time in the challenge. We see it with people that we coach where they'll come to us and go, oh, I only eat 1,000 calories a day. It's like, you probably... eat more than that. And then they'll go, oh yeah, and I train for 20 hours a week. And it's like, you probably don't train that much as well. And it's just human nature to over report how much exercise we do and under report how much food we eat.
Let's not forget, say, that tablespoon or teaspoon of peanut butter that you think is one serving, it actually ends up being four servings.
Yeah.
So those sorts of things. And people, you don't know until you actually, like a food scale or you can actually... you actually count the serving sizes properly, and that's just the way it is. So it's best not to use food in any way, shape, or form in other than to fuel your workouts.
Yeah.
Like, it's fuel.
It's fuel. Similar to that misconception is that idea of eating back calories.
Yeah.
Right? And I think this became more common with the popularity increases of smartwatches.
Mm.
So, I'm talking Fitbit, Garmin, apps on your phone, things like that, where we can start to see, our activity expenditure. We can see the number and go, oh, well, I've expended 3,000 calories today. That means I'm allowed to eat back 3,000 calories, right? Mm. And I think that's, we face problems when we do that, right? Because often this technology, which is really cool, like, I think some Fitbits and other wearable devices are really cool, great information, but the technology isn't sophisticated enough at the moment to be really accurate to tell you exactly how much of energy expenditure you have, right?
Yeah.
Then we face problems where if this device is off, we underreport how much we're actually eating, overreport how much we're actually physical activity we're doing, that calculation often becomes wrong, right? Where we go, oh, well, my Fitbit said that I burned 2,000 calories a day and then I did a workout and I burnt another 1,000 calories. That means I'm allowed to eat 3,000 calories total. And we really simplistically make this equation. That can be misleading, where there's so much room for error and often we don't see any result from that.
Definitely, because also, like, your body's pretty smart, and if you go with that, it's going to eat back what you've done just simply because it wants to stay the same.
Yeah.
So it's going to pretty much take you to maintenance, basically to where you won't see any changes either way.
Yeah.
Because that's where it wants to live.
Mm-hmm.
It just does. It wants to stay there. So if you're sort of trying to equal it out and you're looking at data going, oh, that's a good excuse to equal that out and eat this and eat that, you'll stay the same, that's probably not why you bought that watch in the first place.
No.
So, yeah, it's a good idea not to factor that in. Just use it to count your steps.
And then
use it to look at maybe your sleep, other things like that. But
I think probably the best approach to this kind of energy equation of energy in, energy out, is to actually kind of look at it a little bit more like an algebra equation. Right, where it's okay that we aren't perfectly aware of how much energy we're consuming, and it's okay that we aren't exactly aware of how much energy we're expending, right? But if we change energy intake to X and then energy expenditure to Y, and then we look at the inputs to those two sides, right, and be consistent with that. So the food that we're eating right now, if we stay consistent with that food intake, whatever it is, we don't know if it's 2,200 calories or 2,400 or 2,450.
Mm.
If we're consistently having the same amount every day, we can label that X, great. And then we can measure our overall physical activity expenditure. And we could do that mainly through our step count, right? And we call that Y.
Mm-hmm.
Then if we grab these two variables, X and Y, and then compare that to our body weight, is that body weight changing, yes or no? If it's going down, great, keep doing whatever you're doing. Who cares what number it is? Just call it X and Y. I'm maintaining that, right? But if you're not losing weight, we can go, okay, I'm going to take what I'm eating right now and just reduce it by, let's say, 5% or 10%, mm-hmm. where we might be taking away one snack or making a smaller portion of dinner or something like that, and then reassess our little equation. Is it working? Yes or no? Okay, then let's target the other side. Let's try to increase our step count, whatever it is. But if we're consistent with that, then we can maintain that result, right?
That's right. And you, as we've said in other podcasts as well, you don't want to be manipulating X and Y at the exact same time and going to the extreme with both, like
mm-hmm.
restricting X and making Y huge
mm-hmm.
before you even know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get a lot of people going, I've gone to 0 calories straight away and I'm doing 40,000 steps a day and that's on day one.
Mm.
And that's exaggerating slightly. But, and it's like, where do X and Y go from there? Where do they go?
Mm-hmm.
They're off the page already. They'll never meet again.
No, they're gone.
You know? We just want them to be as close as they can to each other, those two variables, you know, getting you the results.
Yeah.
Mm.
Last one here, our good friend, fasted cardio.
Oh, yes. Yes. Well, that's a personal preference, to be honest, but it really doesn't do anything for you. I don't even know. Do you know where that came from?
No.
Just from
I think it's old school bodybuilding ideas.
Okay.
If you think in a very simplistic way, it's like, oh well, I know that when I exercise I need to expend fuel. And if I don't have any, if I didn't eat anything, then my body's not gonna expend that fuel that I ate. It's gonna expend fuel that it has at the moment. So I can see how this, maybe reductionist idea of being like, oh, well, you know, this, enough. It's rationalistic, makes sense, right?
Where is it going to take it from, though, huh?
Right.
That's the thing. How can you be sure that it's definitely going to grab that fat?
Right. So I think faster cardio, you're right. It's a preference.
Yeah.
It doesn't, there's no magic to faster cardio. You know, you doing faster cardio in the morning isn't going to magically burn more body fat. I do think that there is an element of grain of truth to it, where if you are doing faster cardio, chances are you are doing more steps, right?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if you're going for a walk on a treadmill or walk outside and you're doing that before breakfast. Okay, if that was your routine, you're probably doing more steps than if someone didn't do faster cardio, right? So your NEAT is higher than someone who didn't do that, right?
Mm.
Then we find that some people, when they exercise, they aren't as hungry afterwards. So then that same individual who did faster cardio might end up having a smaller breakfast or meal, first meal or whatever you call it, than someone who didn't do faster cardio. So for some individuals who prefer it and their body responds that way, it can be helpful.
And some people find it hard to exercise after eating straight away. And if just say you get up, we get people who get up at 4:30 and that's the only time they have.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they don't want it. Try and digest a meal before they start everything that they do.
Yep.
And they might start with some cardio
mm-hmm.
it's that day.
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
That makes sense.
We're not saying yes or no, but it's definitely not
magical.
No. If it was, we'd all be doing it, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah. I think some people on the other side, when we do exercise, we respond by being hungry afterwards. I'm one of those. When I finish my exercise bouts, the first thing I think about is food.
Uh-huh.
So even no matter what I'm doing, let that be running or cardio work or weights training, after I work out, shower time, and then it's like searching for food. It's like, I've got to get a meal in me.
Yeah.
So you might be one to want to do fasted cardio because you think that it's going to be some magic, but then you might be one to be hungry after you do that cardio session, so then you end up eating more, so then you don't actually see any change.
Yeah,
right?
True. And the other thing that I've also noticed in my many years of teaching very early classes,
mm-hmm.
very cardio-based things, a lot of people don't give themselves a chance to actually even burn energy because they're so tired, because they're fasted.
Yeah.
They're exhausted. They're up. They're dragging themselves. They can't even get themselves to a level where they might be doing something that benefits their body. Right. They may as well stay asleep.
Right.
So that's the thing.
Yeah.
So I used to encourage some of my participants that I would see lagging. And you think if you're lagging at 5 in the morning, where are you going to be at 5 at night?
Mm.
You know, how's it going to be? So I used to encourage them to have a small something before they came into class, just simply to make it worth their while.
That's right.
As well.
Yeah. And the same as like fasted strength training, right? Where same thing, it's ultimately a preference. If you're training at 4 in the morning because that's the only time you could do it and you can't exercise with food in your belly, okay.
Mm.
That's your environment, your situation.
Yeah, and your body's probably used to it. That's probably the other thing. Bodies adapt to stuff like that. Right. So, you know, I wouldn't recommend that somebody who's first up in the gym going, okay, what's the best optimal thing to do? Oh, sure, walk in and have nothing. No, that wouldn't be the way. I would never recommend a client do that.
No. And look, you're not going to be pulling a personal best on an empty stomach.
No.
Especially first thing in the morning. You're going to have no fuel and it's not going to be a productive workout for some individuals. Right?
Yeah, that's right. Look, I think after a while of training, you do learn that food is fuel. It's actually a good sign when you're hungry. It's all these things that you're taught, I think, when you're younger, about weight loss and things. None of these things are good, but when you're actually into training, you go, hang on, hunger is a good, it's good, good to be hungry, it's good to eat, it's good to eat after you work out to make sure that you're replenishing everything and you're recovering. So it just takes a while to get to that point. So it once again comes back to the idea of not punishing ourselves. So if you're fasted cardioing for like any of those reasons, then it's probably a good idea to try it the other way and see how that works for you.
Yeah. And if you are thinking about transitioning off of faster cardio or faster training in the morning, I'd recommend to start with a small amount of fruit.
Yeah.
Fruit high in fluids, water, and also quite easy to digest.
Easy to digest. I agree.
And good carbohydrate first thing in the morning. Yeah. So if you're one to struggle eating something before you train, experimenting with something like a small banana, half a banana, something like that before you go and train.
Yeah.
Something, the classic, you know, banana and a coffee pre-workout meal is a great way to start.
Long time, I tell you. And the thing is also, that when we say eat something, we're not saying sit down and eat a 3-course meal. It's as simple as even half a banana is enough to get you through.
Get you going.
You know, that's it. Something like that.
Yeah.
Just see how you feel doing that and then report back.
Mm. Another option could be like a protein shake as well. Yeah. But you know, some respond to protein shakes as being, you know, too milky or something like that. So you know, you could be sipping that while you're training so that you get some sort of energy in. But you know, a few options.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you really have to suss that out yourself, and depending on the intensity of the exercise. So if you're first up just doing like a HIIT class, it may be that like a big shake isn't necessarily what you're wanting if you're jumping up and down and things like that.
Yeah.
But then it depends how long you have to digest it as well. So if your gym's a little bit far away, you've got 40 minutes there, you know, that kind of thing, you can definitely just time it well and see how much more energy it gives you. Believe me, because I've been a fasted cardio bunny for many years. If I could have my years back, Steve,
I'd do my time again.
Oh, you know, just all those things where I actually just now look back, and because I'm so keen to build muscle now, I go, oh gosh, that was a waste of a year. That was a waste of a year. So many fasted things. So much fasting, so much not eating.
It doesn't make it go faster.
No, it makes everything go slower. That's right. And that's our final word for the day.
Well, look, we've covered lots of different myths and misconceptions. There were some grain of truths in there, some grains of truth in there. And then there was also a few things that were a little bit misleading. Yeah. So I hope you found this podcast helpful. Tune in next week where we'll be doing this all over again with our Challenge Weekly Show.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
See you guys. Bye.